Oh, sinners and choosers. Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thank you guys for tuning in this week to hear comedians talking about their own religious history and current spirituality, if we believe in it or even buy that word. Thank you for tuning in. I love this episode. I love my guest, Ryan Counts. He's an improviser and comedian. He's a really unique approach to improv, and he's somebody that's, as we'll hear in this interview, he's just very involved in the Clubhouse, which is a local Los Angeles. It's like the hub of LA indie improv, and it's also got a lot of good places for alternative stand-up as well. It's a place where I've spent a lot of time, grown a lot as an artist, and I have very much in debt to Ryan and Becky Drysdale, Jason Van Glass, and other people who are in charge of volunteering and donating so much time to creating this performance space. So if you're in LA, you should definitely check out some kind of show at the Clubhouse at some point. I find it at Clubhouse Improv. And yeah, hope you like this week's episode. For more Choose Your Own Religion stuff, go to chooseyourownreligion.com, Stitcher and iTunes. Subscribe there. I love you guys. Namaste.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners, wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers and know that you are blessed? I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best, and I hope that you choose your own religion.
What's up, man?
You know, I am doing great. Things have been good. I went to Disneyland yesterday.
Whoa, I've never been.
It is the best on New Year's Day. Everyone is either recovering from the night before or it's blacked out for them if they're local residents. So
oh, yeah.
It's a little secret, but now everyone knows.
Wow, wait, yeah. Do you have a pass?
No. But we went before my wedding. I had everyone in town visiting, so we all went to Disneyland.
Uh-huh.
But my wife now couldn't go because of work. So this was like our little getaway.
Little couples getaway.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, have you been before, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I am a Disney-phile. Like, I...
Really?
Not so much the content, more the theme parks. I love the design of it, how they suck every dollar out of you.
Not that anybody needs to be sold on Disneyland, because I haven't been there.
Yeah,
but can you sell me on Disneyland?
It's an escape.
Okay,
it's a way to completely my favorite thing is just the design of it itself is meant to close you out from the outside world, so that he could actually put you in the experience. It's virtual reality before virtual reality was a thing.
Oh shit! Now you're talking my language.
That's what I think everyone like that, and that's where I think a lot of virtual reality coming and being the next big thing.
Yeah,
you could learn a thing or two from what's gone before. I hope that's what they're doing.
Interesting.
Just the pulling you out of what you the shit you live in, and giving you that fantasy that's tailored towards what the vision of the creator was.
Whoa! It's almost like like the Tomorrowland thing is almost then kind of meta in that sense, because they actually have VR.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it's so funny. Tomorrowland is the most underdeveloped land currently. Like, it's out of date. It's just so out of date. And I know they're putting in Star Wars land, and right now it's serving as like a fake Star Wars land until that's finally finished.
Oh yeah, wait, are they retiring Tomorrowland?
They're not retiring it, but I'm sure they're gonna have to revamp it.
Yeah, make it. It just turns into another Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
Dark as shit.
Lots of dark puzzles. And
I've been, speaking of VR, I've just been obsessed with it the past couple months. I got it months ago, then hardly didn't play it at all. I got the HTC Vive. Are you familiar with VR at all?
I am learning through the experience of others. Like, my best friend is huge into it, and my brother-in-law, sort of brother-in-law, he's not married, but he might as well be brother-in-law. And then my sister's boyfriend are both huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love it.
I mean, it's one of those things where it is definitely like, there was so much hype when before the Oculus and the Vive were released that it couldn't possibly live up to that hype of like, oh, it's going to change your life. It's going to be like a whole new way. We're more still thinking of like future possibilities for it. Don't get me wrong. I love playing and like dicking around and like stupid video games and stuff. And like over New Year's, I actually like hopped in a lobby, like an alt space, which is like a social hangout space. And there was like a New Year's party going on there. And I like danced in VR, and it was really weird. It was like really cathartic and weird. It was like the next best thing to being at a concert. And so that was that stuff is cool, but it still is like you're. It still is fairly limited.
It's another paintbrush, I think. Like if you look at film and how it developed, and the first films were like they didn't know what to do either.
Yeah.
They were, you know, taking film of people leaving warehouses, and that was entertaining.
right.
Or my favorite's the Great Train Robbery, I believe, or I think that's what it was, where they had someone shoot at the audience with a gun, and that scared the living daylights out of you know. Hundreds of people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think there were thousands of people yet.
That reminds me of this place when I was a kid called Tweetsie Railroad in North Carolina.
Oh,
do you know Tweetsie Railroad?
I think I remember it. I don't think I ever went there.
Wait,
but I definitely heard of it because I'm from North Carolina. Well, I lived in North Carolina.
Wait, really? How did I miss that?
I've been all over the place. I was born in Chicago, but then I moved down to North Carolina and then grew up primarily in Virginia. So
wait.
I have a little bit of. I was in Greensboro.
Greensboro, yep. That's where my sister went to college.
Yeah. Greensboro, which Greensboro college?
UNCG.
UNCG, yeah.
There's a surprisingly amount of colleges in Greensboro.
Yeah.
I feel like there's too many for the size of the city. There's like
amazing,
five
yeah.
in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, where in Virginia did you grow up?
Richmond.
Richmond.
Yeah, right outside Richmond.
RVA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there a handful of times. But yeah, Tweetsie Railroad, that was like, it was definitely before a PC culture, before the... before the internet had kind of like really risen, and it's like train robberies. It was like cowboys and Indians, like classic stuff.
For sure,
held in I want to say it's near Maggie Valley, North Carolina. It's like deep mountains.
See, you would love Disneyland because that's what it was based on. Like they did a lot of the same things. They had the Indian village, and they had the frontier land and stuff like that.
I know I would like Disney. I really don't know. Part of it is like it's this. I don't know if you have this LA syndrome where it's like when it's always available, it's so easy to be like, I'll go next time.
Oh yeah,
yeah, constantly. That's me constantly.
The beach is that for me. I have to make myself go to the beach once a year just to remind myself that it's so close.
Right.
I'm like I'm in California. I have to do this for the boy in Kansas who is dreaming of living in Los Angeles.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wait, are you a beach person or a mountain person?
Oh, I hate the beach.
I hate both.
No, I do love mountains. I love hiking.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I consider the hills here mountains a lot of the times. I know everyone calls them hills, but yeah,
no.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
Grandfather Mountain? Do you remember Grandfather
Mountain?
Oh,
I remember Grandfather Mountain.
I love it. Yeah.
I actually remember driving up because we lived like an hour from there, and we would go on like school field trips a couple times in elementary school. And I remember this is one of those memories that just sticks out to you that's not necessarily super more important than the others, but I remember this one. I was riding in a minivan with my mom driving, and then me and my best friend were like in the far back. Like there was so driver's seat, passenger, empty middle row. We're in the far back. She's just playing random songs on the radio, and Meredith, what's the song, Bitch? Is it by Meredith somebody?
Oh, I don't know if I know. I'm sure I would know it.
Yeah, I'm a bitch. I'm a lover.
Yeah.
But we didn't know she was saying bitch or what bitch was, so we were just singing loudly along to that song.
Oh.
And she got so mad, so flustered.
And it's like, change the knob.
Yeah. Wait, were your parents very tight, like with your like controlling like what media you could have or anything?
The
like
only
that?
Thing, not particularly. My dad loves. Shitty movies. Like he's a huge. Like I remember growing up. Honestly, my dad wasn't aware of my self awareness early enough.
Mm.
So I remember watching like he had no problem watching like B movies and anything with like you know boobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so like I had no problem with that. I think the biggest thing they had was I remember Power Rangers specifically because all my friends were really into Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, I want to be into Power Rangers. And my mom was like, no, it's dumb. Not that it's violent. She just didn't want to suffer watching
just
it.
Just that it's dumb?
Yeah.
It was I just love
like,
Power
I
Rangers.
Don't want. I know. I think the idea of robots is awesome and like turning into dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't? Like, if I was to create a robot, why would you not make it a dinosaur?
I know. That is everything kids love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So it was just because it was dumb. They didn't have. Were you religious growing up?
So I was raised going to church every Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely, my parents tried to make sure to instill religion on all of us.
Uh-huh.
And we've kind of had, it's been interesting since then. I'm very, that's one of the things I'm so excited to do this podcast.
Because
it really has forced me to like think about it a lot and like how it's. affected my life and how it's changed as yeah. I've grown up.
Well, you said all of us. Is this a big
family?
I
have two sisters.
Okay.
And
yeah.
me. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And which denomination was this?
Lutheran.
Or? Lutheran.
Missouri Synod Lutheran.
Oh.
You have to be distinct.
Yeah.
Because we're not Elka. We don't let women be priests.
That's
or
right.
Or believe in the gays.
Yeah. I was about to say, Missouri Synod, that's like the right wing.
It's
one.
The one step from Catholic. Like, I married someone who was Catholic, and I was like, almost everything, yeah, Catholic in everything but names. So, yeah,
gotcha. Yeah, wait, isn't there an even more conservative Lutheran one, like the Wisconsin people or something?
No, Wisconsin's pretty liberal, from remember.
Okay,
I could be wrong.
I could be more wrong. But yeah.
But I think Missouri Synod is typically considered to be the most stringent. I remember in Chicago, they still did worship services in German,
mm-hmm.
Similar to like Catholics with Latin. It was like, so it would go to, you know, they'd have the all German service.
Okay. Oh, cool. Yeah. We had like a Scottish version of that in the Presbyterian Church.
Oh, wow.
Because Presbyterians come from, basically Scottish heritage.
So they would speak in all Scottish.
Yeah. Well, all Scottish. Yes. No, there would be loud ass bagpipes in these tiny ass churches. That
see,
were just,
I'm into
like,
that. I'll do that. I'm
it
like,
was
yeah.
honestly, it was my favorite Sunday of the year. Just like full unapologetically Scottish.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That, yeah. It's like
Kirkin of the Tartan is what they would call it.
Oh, it sounds like something out of Braveheart. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait. So you're going to a Missouri Synod church.
Yes.
Big Lutheran family.
Yep.
Weekly. How is little Ryan? Is he super into it? Is he like, this is cool?
He is into it. He's confused as to like, so I was very awkward socially growing up. So I was not into the youth scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I never was. I was always sort of like an outsider. My best friends at church were the ones that everyone else kind of rejected and were the uncool ones.
Yeah.
I remember my sister, and I, going to the adult Bible study because we couldn't deal with all the youth in high school,
mm-hmm.
which was really neat. But looking back also kind of like led me to where I am now, which is always questioning and seeking, because we would go there and basically they loved us because we would question everything that they were teaching.
Mm.
And I think they thought it as an opportunity to show us, you know, how to preach and to teach, which
and
I won't lie. There were moments where like they had good things to say, but it also helped open my eyes to, we don't all know, you know, even people that are church going and like, that are secure in their faith, there's still things that they don't, you know, quite know. And I think that's fine. That's something, and you know, I think everyone's allowed that. So.
Being open to mystery.
Exactly.
Within that space. Yeah. And they probably also appreciated that it just like filled time.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, oh, we have young people. So it's like, we're, you know, we're cool. We're hip.
Yeah. Very hip. That was interesting. Something you said made me, this is more about my own personal life experience that I never thought about it in this way, but like, because my dad is a minister, so I felt like a socially awkward kid a lot of times, but because my dad's a minister, I was sort of like, I had to be there. I had to be there. Going to youth group, going and being involved in those things wasn't an option for me. And also I think some people felt obligated to like be nicer to me for that reason. But then I also think it gave me an opportunity, because I know I don't know if this sounds weird to say, but like I know the group of like the sort of church youth outcast type people that weren't quite in youth group, but everybody knew who they were.
Oh yeah, that's exactly who I was.
But like I remember I feel like I could maybe relate to them more easily than other, because I was like, well, I'm gonna have to be here anyway. I don't know, it felt like I was in a weird like I felt this way all the way through school. I don't know about you, but like I would feel too uncomfortable being too much a part of any one group, so I'd be a floater between a lot of different groups.
I like to think that's what led us to like being able to do, like, I think good improvisers are people that can do that.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're able to adapt based on who you're talking to.
The context.
And you know the audience.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I have stronger than my sisters, because my middle sister, I'm the oldest in the family.
Mm-hmm.
She's very against, not I wouldn't say against religion, but she's not religious.
Sure, yeah.
She
a-religious.
I think she's agnostic would be the best way to describe it. I haven't actually asked her personally.
Yeah, she's not posting memes on Facebook about like fuck God.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Posting Richard Dawkins like.
I know it's like one of those things where, I mean, like all three of us kind of worry my parents because we don't go to church, but
sure.
But I can definitely talk to her and know that like what she believes, and I have no problem like with that.
Yeah.
And then I know I can to talk to my parents, who are very faithful, and make it so that they feel comfortable and that they're comfortable with how I am,
mm-hmm.
because I know what, you know, their worries are and how I can talk to them about it. So
gotcha. And I'm curious too, how does your, I mean, this is something I've always wondered, because Presbyterians, we've had women ministers for 50 plus years now.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't ever, for me growing up, it was always like a given that women could be ministers and take leadership roles. But how is it, I mean, do you remember what, I'm curious how you felt that being explained to you growing up and then the older you got, and also how your sisters and how the women that you knew in the church would have, like, I don't know, how do they resolve
that's
that?
So interesting. My mom was raised Methodist and Baptist, I believe, but mainly Methodist. So she never really was a subscriber to it. It was just sort of like, but she didn't really fight it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my sisters just didn't care enough that there were no, but I think also that's part of the problem of why they probably weren't comfortable with the church is they didn't feel connected.
Yeah.
Cause there was no one to be like, you know, their representative of like, oh, this is someone I can really relate to.
Yeah.
I think that was really honestly the problem that I had is I never felt a sense of community, within the church other than those weirdos that I was able to hang out with, but we would hang out outside of the church. So it was fine. You know, that was
So it wasn't like it's connected to the church anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It was more like connected, well, for me and my friends who I met like that, there was like video games and shit.
Yeah.
And like playing outside.
Exactly. And it was like, I remember confirmation, and like that's a huge thing in the Lutheran church.
Same here. Of course. Yeah, yeah.
And they'd have a weekend getaway where everyone had to go out.
Yep.
And like,
we had a confirmation trip.
Yeah. And I'm sure that some people were like, you know, having some adult times in the woods and stuff like that. And I was just like, I remember coming back from marching band and I had been at a football game and then I'm stuck going to this camp and it's like something I totally did not want to do. And it was like, it was just so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't care about any of these people, you know? It's like being at a summer camp that you're not really a part of.
Yeah.
And then just, I
totally relate to that. I mean, I remember even on my eighth grade confirmation trip feeling kind of more part of that group because it was we went to Washington D.C. We did like a lot of homeless work, stayed in like a shelter or like a, I guess it was like a kind of a hostel, or I don't know if it was like the upstairs part of a church. I can't even remember. It was, we had sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Point. But I remember having like a huge crush on this girl, Samantha Choate, during that during that trip, and like just pining so hard. But she was like one of the cool kids, the whole cool kids, like there was like a group of five or six of them that sort of sequestered themselves off. And I was like, oh man! And I remember listening to like all of the Joshua Tree on the way back home from that trip, just like, with or without you, Samantha. With or without you, I can't live.
Oh my God! That's the sad thing. I don't even remember anyone from my. From the age group that I was in. Like, I know some names maybe, but...
I mean, did you have a period where you were like, I really want to be friends with these people and they're just being dicks to me?
That's the sad thing. I think with my sisters being part of the same group, I was just so detached. Mm. My social circles were different. Like, I was in Boy Scouts, and honestly, that was probably a bigger part of my life than my church.
Eagle Scout?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yeah, got to.
Wait, what was your service project?
I built benches for nice. a local park. I wanted to do something a little more extravagant, but I just couldn't. At that time, you were starting to get so involved. That's the thing that sucks is with Boy Scouts, you age out at 18, so you have to have it done before then.
Uh-huh.
You don't start working on your project till 16, and that's like prime, like, I've discovered girls, I've discovered marching band, I've started doing social groups in high school, you know, it's like, so you don't have a lot of time, but
hey, nothing wrong with a bench. I mean, benches, I don't feel like I've ever gone to a park and been like, oh man, there's a bench here.
Yeah.
You know, always like, appreciated.
Thank goodness. It's an appreciated bench. There's a, you know, and this trail now has a few more benches than it probably needs. It's a 3-mile loop and it has 6 benches, but you know, hey. For those, I like to think of the, you know, when I'm 80, I'll put those to use.
Right. Perfect size for 3 people, 4 people, kind of pushing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Two people, sure. You know, me and your honey, whatever. well, that's cool. So, okay, anyway, back to church. So, at what point, when you went to college, was that kind of, it's a typical kind of.
Oh, man. So, college was a rebirth.
Oh, a rebirth.
Because I was in the substance-free dorms.
Wow.
And so, everyone that I lived with was either in Crusade. Or I can't remember the name of the other group, but there were two big social.
We had Crusade and
there's another one, right? There's always that. That's the smaller one that like had free dinners, and I would go to that all the time.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, there's a lot of smaller ones, but I can't think of. I think there was another significant one. I can't think of.
Yeah, and I think I've always turned to church when in a situation where I had no one else, because that would be my parents' recommendation for you can meet people. And it's true. You
it's
do.
True. Yep.
I do have friends that I met through those groups that I became very close to. But it was always friends that sort of like became you know, it was outside of that again. It was something where I just felt phony because everyone was always so, like, I remember people that were really into Crusade and they'd be like proselytizing and trying to get people to come all the time. Mm-hmm. And I never felt comfortable with the idea of trying to force someone, or not force someone, but like get someone to come under fake pretenses that they didn't discover it themselves.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always a weird thing. I remember somebody, I don't know if you know Rivers Langley, he's a comic out here, but he talks about like, when he was kind of an atheist kid, but then they would have like the local Methodist church would have like a Dreamcast and like, you know, candy and like board games and shit. And they're like, all right, and now we're going to talk to you about the Lord.
And that made me so upset because it's like, you're going against what you're actually talking about, which is, this is something, you know, the beliefs that I'm trying to pass on to you is in someone that is so loving and so kind, but I'm going to bribe you with an Xbox or free dinner.
Yeah.
It's like, why can't we get you on merit alone or right. something, you know?
Well, they probably, I mean, it's a tough bind for them, right? Because they're like, well, we've tried the merit alone thing.
Oh, I know.
Can't really get them in here. But plus they may not, I mean, who knows? It's a weird thing in general trying to market something that's like supposedly spiritual and like, you know, non-materialistic, but they're like, but we need to keep the lights on. We need to we want to make this cooler and bigger.
We still need to get college's approval to have this huge. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you're right that like, if you're not in sync with that group of people, if you don't want to hang out with those people, then you're just not going to stay around.
So yeah.
I don't care what community it is. Ultimately, I think that's what it boils down to is like, I mean, part of it is like, and I'm just talking to myself here. It's like, part of it is I need to like put in the effort too. I need to like maybe write out a temporary, like early, like rough patch. If I in general, like maybe the philosophy of the people there and I like what they're doing and I want to like be able to contribute to it. But ultimately it's like one of those things where it's like, if I can't have like many honest conversations here, then it's going to be really tough for me.
Yeah. If you don't find that really good friend, that's like, hey, we're in this together and get a sense of community. That's one of the things that I remember taking from church, which was, you know, was it wherever there are two of us, I am there too.
Yeah.
And I think that is so true. And I think it's only two. And I think that it's like, where there's two of us, I will be there. No one else. There's no room. You know, this car is
a crowd.
Yeah. This Jesus car is for three only. I mean, like, I find that to be so, like, I really don't get that much from a huge room of people.
Interesting. Do you know why? Do you distrust large crowds?
Because it's, the message is so distilled. I mean, or not distilled, it's so watered down.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to cater to everyone. And I think one of my strongest beliefs is that religion is a very personal journey. Mm-hmm. And that everyone has their own way of discovering what they believe and the credo, I guess, that you live by. I love this concept. Like, even your podcast alone, I think it's more than just like a comedy.
Sorry, that's my computer.
Yeah, it's more than just a way of having an episode every week. But it really is. It's exploring each individual's journey to what, you know, could be something that they live by or believe in.
Yeah, thanks, man. Sometimes it's not, it's like dumber than that. But
I've listened to it. I know. But but there is some substance. Like, in life, we don't want to live by just like, you know, you have to. I think comedy is a great way of getting people to understand the core concepts of what you believe, though, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks for saying that. I mean, that's part of. I definitely think it's so personal to all of us. There's some similar patterns and things like that. I love like comedy in particular. Why there's been times where I've wondered like, is this the right medium for the things I want to talk about? But then I think ultimately it is, because I do think it's like one of the I get uncomfortable with like over sentimentality.
Yes.
Even though I have like a really sentimental feeling type podcast and like vibe of it sometimes.
Yeah.
It has like a kind of like warmth. I don't know. Or I try to avoid that though, because sometimes that makes me uncomfortable. To me, it feels like it's the same thing as like spiritual pride, or it's the same thing as like I don't know, putting too much stock in your own shit type thing. And so why I love comedy is that it's the best venue I know of that you can constantly call bullshit on everything, including yourself, including things you hold dear, but also like still hold them dear. And like, just, but it's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like a, uh, it, you know, some I've heard somebody talk about Zen in this way, and a lot of people aren't who practice Zen aren't going to agree with this, but this is the way I like thinking about Zen things, is that Zen is like a method. It's the same thing as comedy in terms of like it pops whatever spiritual bubble you think you have, feeling like, oh, I'm like such a good person now, or for this reason. But and it's like there's a line between having self-love and having a genuine love of neighbor and of developing things like spirituality, and we need these concepts to help us talk about them. But I think taking them too seriously, that's one of my biggest problems with religion. It's like taking your own narrative too seriously and not having enough mystery.
You know? And I don't know why this made me think of what you were, within that. It was really making me think of my biggest problem, which is the idea of I'm doing this for, you know, reward, basically, in the end of things. And that's, I think, one of the things that, like, I was talking about earlier with the Xbox, come and you get an Xbox. And, like, what you were talking about, like, coming up with this, I guess, idea of your, like, what you, the bubble. I guess you mean by the bubble, you're talking about, like, self, like, what I believe in. Like, what do you mean?
Like, when I think of, like, a spiritual bubble, and that what I think of is like just having like developing too much, I don't know, like having too high of any kind of concept of like, I don't know, this is how the world works, or this is definitively what I believe, or this is
closing,
like,
it's like ending yourself, like stopping your growth by saying, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus,
right? I found the answer,
I found the answer, I'm done.
Right.
And I'm going to heaven, and everyone else that doesn't believe in my bubble is going to hell.
Right. That's exactly it. Yeah. So the bubble is just the answer.
It's stopping your self-growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of Eastern practices, I think, outside of the West, are very good at not having that. Because you're never satisfied. You're always trying to find nirvana. You're always trying to become the Buddha. I mean, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Do you meditate much at all, or do any Buddhist shit or anything?
So I don't in any defined way. However, I do love to run, and I really find myself... I believe that my running and my... Even just working out at the gym, I have no aspirations of becoming healthier or skinnier, but I do love the practice of working out.
Yeah.
And I think that is honestly my way of becoming in tune with, you know, myself and with the world. It gets me to stop being so stuck in my head.
Totally. Me too, man. And it just has it's a huge like endorphin boost. I feel so much better after work. It's always one of these, working out is like a weird thing always, when it's like, I'm pretty good at getting in a rhythm of it. I have been for a while, but like sometimes there are still days where I'm like, oh, I don't want to work out. And yet I have literally never regretted working out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a funny thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, outside of injury, it's like I've never,
Yeah, I've not even one time been like, oh, damn it, why did I do a hard workout?
Fit it in. If I have 12 minutes and it's like it's down to I have 12 minutes to do something, and I go for a 12 minute run, it may not actually do anything for my body or for me, it barely gets my heart rate up, but at least I feel like I did something, and that makes me happy.
It keeps the momentum going.
Yeah
totally,
for sure.
Wait, where do we get to before we dovetail?
Before we did that, I was talking about the Xbox, and I think that the concept of heaven and hell are that same thing. I'm still up in the air as to what I think happens after we pass. Mm-hmm. I like to think with eternity and infinity, anything is possible, and everything is possible, and it just keeps happening and cycling. Gotta love that Battlestar idea of everything's happened and everything will happen again.
Yeah.
Could totally see that as being a thing. But my big I really despise the idea that you can control people with this concept of, like, you know, I just can't, it's unfathomable to me that someone who would put us here would, like, be so petty as, you know, without direction.
The heaven hell thing, especially the hell part, never made any sense to me. Heaven confused me for a different reason. Hell, I was totally with you. I'm like, why would somebody who loves us and created us and knew what he was getting us into, like, put, he knew the circumstances, he supposed, you know, in this theoretical model of like God being an old white guy in the sky, creating all of us, and he's like, and he knew what was going to happen. He knew some people would never hear of him. And so he would send those people to hell, or even if he knew I was, even if I had heard of him, I was a good Christian, but I just happened to because of the circumstances of my life, happened to go down a dark path, he would like send me to hell potentially too. Like, why does he even care what happened? Like, in that sense, why would he? Why would there be a bad option? Like, yeah. what's
my
going
idea
on
of
there?
Hell is honestly that people are fighting over the idea of like, oh, I need to get everyone on my side, or and that's the thing I don't understand either, is like you have so many Islamophobes out there, or people that are against other religions, and it's like. So what you're telling me is you're going to basically kill someone for not believing what you believe in, and then dooming them to this place of eternal damnation. Like I don't know. It gets me so upset.
Oh, me too. And heaven was always weird to me too, with like, what is, like how could you make a perfect, painless place that had any point to it whatsoever?
Oh my God, that sounds like a hell in its own.
Exactly,
sometimes.
Right? Like a San Junipero situation. Have you seen Black Mirror?
No.
Okay, well,
I need to watch it.
I won't
though.
Spoil it any more than that. I think of heaven and hell a lot. Sometimes I wonder how many of like, you know, these old religions, when they talk about things like heaven and hell or whatever, whenever they have a super cosmological aspect of it, like, oh, there's an afterlife with a hell and with a heaven.
Yeah.
That if that message through the game of telephone that was bound to exist back then and through various edits and revisions and political edits, which is learning about all that stuff, that even happened was one big reason why I fell away from the church originally. Yeah. It was like hearing that, like, oh, the Bible was put together in a kind of a political manner, like it was
by a bunch of men. Once again, it's like, you know,
but not even like, it wasn't even like the original one original group of men. It was like, you know, edits here, edits there, guy coming in after the fact being like, no, we're gonna remove this part,
this book doesn't count, we're gonna take this book out.
And so that's what makes me wonder if like heaven and thinking of heaven and hell is like, these are states of mind that we can achieve right here on earth. Maybe that's what Jesus meant by the kingdom of heaven is at hand, is that you can live, you can, if you fall, you know, if you work to be a better person and truly see your neighbor as yourself, if everybody did that, that is actually how you can create a heavenly situation on earth. Not a painless situation, but one where everybody actually is kind to each other, everybody actually is supportive and helps achieve goals. Or you can choose, you know, to do the some things that are like indulgent and you might say self-centered and selfish and self-driven, very ego-driven in general.
And then we end up in the United States that we have today.
Well,
which
yeah.
Which is hell to me. So, honestly, and is it that we were wrong that heaven and hell are what come after, and it's not just a state of being now?
Exactly. And, I think all the religions talk to, I mean, I just got a book.
I haven't read it yet, but
he's getting a book. You can't see, but he's reaching for the book.
I haven't read this book yet, but I've heard good things about it. Ego is the enemy. Now, it's not a religion book at all. It's more of like a somewhere between self-help and like, oh, this is like his thesis statement on like what makes people successful or not. Is and failing usually has to do with like being too egotistical in some way or another. And in the same way, I feel like almost all the religions, they were basically trying to get at that themselves. I mean, like, you know, your ego is a liar. Like, don't pay attention to it. And to some people that meant, because your ego is a liar, you shouldn't drink, you shouldn't, you know, indulge in like all these other things that the ego likes. You should be very ascetic or whatever.
Oh, interesting.
And some people are like, oh, the ego is a liar, so just reflect on, like, meditate on that, like treat other people with pure compassion because they have their own little narrative and their own little life that you may not realize because you're just you. So I feel like that's why we needed the system systematically implement religion for a long time, is that?
Yeah.
And also there was all these explanations for like, well, this is how science works through God magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like coming up with ways to rationalize everything that's going on.
Right? Yeah. And I do think so. And I think the hell in that sense, it definitely, I know I'm in my most hellish states when I'm my most selfish, you know, when I'm doing things where I'm like, and selfish sometimes means just being lazy, just being like, oh, I'm just like gonna like lay on the couch. I'm not gonna work out, or I'm not gonna do whatever.
Sloth, right? I mean, like, the seven deadly sins.
Well, all the various nasty, weird ways ego. Yeah, because that's like maybe the nicest manifestation of the ego is just laziness. That's like the one that has the least impact on other people. But then, you know, everything from like being like thinking two terms. I don't know. Sometimes it's like weird to talk about, but sometimes I think too much career terms over other people, or like, oh, I don't know if that's going to be good for my, like a good look for me, or the things like that. But I hate that part of me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever feel that. I try to really evaporate that as much as possible. Cause I think thinking at any time any kind of terms like that makes me a much worse comedian.
Thinking I instead of we or me. Or no, wait, that's not right. Us. I instead of we and us, yes.
100%. Yeah. I mean, do you battle that? Do you do anything?
Constantly.
Like,
I think we all do. And I mean, I know for a fact that one of my big things is also just anxiety. And anxiety is completely driven by a selfishness. Because you're, and I'm not saying there's now. Anxiety is a disease, and it's something that a lot of people suffer. And I'm not saying that you're wrong for having it, or because I mean I have it, and it's something that I fight with. And it's
at the very least, there are phases of life and of moods and moments where you're like you can't. It's really hard to feel like you have any control over it.
Yes.
In that situation, I have it all the time too.
Yeah, and I've done therapy and I'm on medication for. I'm not ashamed to admit. And it all stems from like not being able to detach yourself from yourself,
and be
part of the bigger community,
right?
And seeing that whatever is happening to you, and as bad as it seems, you're still part of like, well, how is this really going to affect everything in the bigger picture?
Mm-hmm.
And what's like, you know, stepping through. Well, this is how I feel, and accepting that you can feel that way. That's not who you are. And you know, let's not get fixated on it.
Totally,
because I definitely fixate on things too, which I think is the same problem.
Oh, 100%. I have that problem, and I just, you know, it's crazy how assumptions that we make about other people, or like when we feel like we've been wronged. When I feel like I've been wronged, I'll often make an assumption about somebody, and that creates the narrative of being wronged when really none of that was in play into their thinking. At all, whatsoever.
Like driving. Driving's the number one case study for me. Is constantly remind myself that just because someone cut me off or someone's like speeding past me, it's not. I'm again, that thought process is putting yourself at the forefront,
right?
As if they are thinking of you, which they probably are not. I mean, like, I started wearing the safety pin after Trump, as a lot of people are, and I know there's a lot of arguments against, like, you know, it's a false sense of like trying to medicate your guilt for being, you know, not doing enough, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But for me, it's become sort of like a rope string around my finger of reminding me to try to think of others.
I like that. Yeah.
Instead of like and realizing that it's not what others are doing. It's not because of me. They have stuff going on in their life and stuff like that.
And that's what, you know, I think that's often what the message of Jesus was originally, was like, you know, the world, it's.
Love others.
Love your enemies, because your enemies have exactly. It's not even personal. Yeah. The hatred your enemies have for you is not even personal. I mean, that's such a fucking mind. That's the hardest one for me to do, and I don't. You know, I'm far from perfect at doing it. I mean, have you ever heard of Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements?
No, I don't think so.
Four Agreements are fantastic. It's a short book. I recommend you reading it. But it's based on like this old ancient Toltec, which is a Mexican spiritual tradition. But basically, his four agreements are always do your best. Don't make assumptions. Mm-hmm. Speaking of assumptions, don't take things personally, which is the other one. And then be impeccable with your word, which means not only to others, like promises you make, things you say, intent, like, but to yourself. Don't badmouth yourself. Don't beat yourself up.
And things this is based like, off of the Toltecs?
Toltecs.
Yeah.
And that's... I confess I don't know that much about Toltecs outside of the sentence I just said.
Yeah. No, but that's amazing, because that's like, I would love, I'll definitely have to write that down in the memory banks to check on it later.
But. Yeah, but like that, don't take things personally is such a key one, because like, and it's, I think that's a way we can really develop, I don't know, cultivate compassion and develop love, is like anytime, because there's people in the comedy world where I'm like, oh, like fuck that person, they didn't respond to a message, or they didn't, you know, blah, blah, million petty little things. But then that's what I'm talking about too. Like I often find there's an assumption in there somewhere that I'm making secretly that I didn't even realize that I'm making. I just assumed that it's true. And so I'm like, oh, they saw it and they just fucking said, fuck him, forget it.
Yeah.
But it could be their phone accidentally read it, whatever. But then also, even if they actually do have a legit beef with me, you know what? It's not even personal. Yes, it might even be specific to me, but it's not personal in a global sense, because maybe I did do something that anybody would have like reacted negatively to. Maybe we just have a bad vibe together for some tragic, unexplained reason. You just don't click with some people off the bat.
And
you
what's
know?
Worse, what's more negative? The fact that someone's ignoring you, for some reason, or the fact that you're giving in to the fact that, you know, you're getting anger at the fact that they're ignoring you.
I'm feeding so much energy into that. Into
because their act of ignorance is that takes nothing. I can ignore a text no problem and not think twice about it.
Yep.
But to be angry about it is going to take time and energy away from you.
Yep. And especially when it may even be a benevolent, like, oh, I read it and then I'm going to respond later and then I just totally fucking forgot. Just totally slipped my mind.
Yeah.
I've done that before.
Oh, and then, trust me, I'm the same way with as many emails as I get. Yeah.
I know. So I just, that's also what I, if anybody out there, what if I had like 1,000, like,
he has his fingers crossed. I know no one can see it, but he's totally, he's ignoring it for a purpose.
And... Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to, we got off track.
Yeah.
There's no off track in this podcast, but
I like it. It's like a river. That's how I look at life.
Yeah. Well, let's
roll on it. We're all going to end up in the ocean.
Yeah. Let's bend back towards Ryan in college.
Yes.
So he's had a rebirth.
Had a rebirth. Started going to these crusade groups.
Right.
And quickly, like you were talking about, unless there's something that keeps you going, you start to slip away. And I think as I found other social circles, I started working as a projectionist. I started really becoming involved with making movies. I felt more comfortable about myself.
Mm.
And I think that's another thing, is that religion can really, this is so bad sounding, but it's true, at your weakest, I know a lot of people say you'll always turn to God, but I don't know if that's a positive thing. Because you can turn to a lot of things, drugs and other things. I think it's not a terrible thing to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, it's not the best time to establish a firm relationship with God, I don't think, or whatever energy or higher force you believe in. It's like elections. So we just voted for Satan himself to be our president. And, you know, during the elections, everyone's talking about how unfair it is and how we have to change all these laws. And it's like, it's not time to talk about it during the election. It's time to talk about it now after the election so that we can be ready for the next go around.
I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. It kind of creates, it's like a codependent, or it's a relationship of dependency versus a relation of like mutual co-creation.
Yeah, type I'll thing. Take anything right now, including the fact that I believe that others are wrong, and if they don't join the same thing that I'm joining, then that they're going to burn, and I mean, shouldn't relate to other people. Like, that is something that can happen. I think that's where religion, you look at countries where people are dying for what they believe in, and by killing others, and it's like they're directly going against what they believe in, and it's they're driven to that out of desperation.
Right.
They have nothing else, and we're not helping because you know we're comfortable fat cats that are living in the West.
I mean, think about that. Where it'd be like, imagine if there was some guy that, just some dude in his like 20s or 30s, let's say 30s or 40s, some older successful dude, and they're like, "Oh man, have you dated George?" Like, "No, I haven't." Well, when you're at your lowest, he will be ready for you. That's exactly who you need when you're at your lowest. Like, he only wants, like, I know it's not, they don't mean it in that sense. Like, God only wants you when you're at your lowest.
No.
But it should be. One thing I heard recently, do you know Rob Bell?
No.
Heard of him? He's a he's somebody who's worked with Pete Holmes before.
Okay.
With, like, he's a former kind of mega church preacher, but now he's like a quasi secular spiritual kind of weird dude. Anyway, you should check him, Rob Bell. Should check him out. He'll be far more eloquent a lot of matters of the spirit than I am. But one thing I recently heard him talking about was this Jewish concept of like the world being a there's a creative view of the world where you are creating the world with the divine. It's not like God's created this and given it to you. It's that you are working with your sense of God, the creator, whatever, to help manifest the world as something, as the thing that you want it to be. It's an active, more active form than saying the opposite of that would be a sort of static view of like, this is the way the world is. You have to find your place in it. You have to just fit in somewhere. You have to like take what you're given.
Yes.
You have to deal with it, which is just a very uninspiring. And I think that, but that's, but I feel a lot of times with a lot of, not all Christian churches, but a lot of churches where it's like, this is the answer. We got Jesus. We're done, basically. I mean, we should help our fellow man for sure. We should like make each other feel happier. But like, here's the end point. Like, there's not as much of the let's manifest this shit together.
Instead of being something where we look into the past with a, I think the best thing is to look at the Old Testament. I know a lot of people talk about that are still, you know, very faith. I don't want to say faithful, but religious. In churches, they will say that, you know, the New Testament comes over and supersedes a lot of what the Old Testament says, right, where we don't agree with
the new
what it
covenant.
Says. Yeah, the new covenant. And to me, it's like you're basically, that was a point of growth, and now where's the new Testament? Where's the new Testament? Like,
right.
Why is it that we're still feeding
off? We figured
off?
It out 2,000
yeah.
years ago.
And I understand yeah. that, you know, the Son of God came and gave us, you know, the words of God, but they've been, like you said, they've been retranslated. They've been turned by people who have rewritten them over and over and to suit their own needs.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it that it can't be? I was thinking about the other day, and like honestly, improv has taken all the needs of what I do, what I used to do for church. I was thinking
yeah.
of my parents.
Yeah.
They get their community from their church. I get it from doing improv.
Yeah.
And it's not a replacement. I understand that. But the idea of going to different teachers and having them teach you what skills they think are best for improv that help them. And
yeah.
then you take what works for you. And it may not work for you
yeah.
because you're a different person. You're a unique
right.
individual,
right?
Right? And so why is it that, why can't churches be like that? Where you go to a Lutheran church, you go and you learn what works for you.
Yeah.
Then you're, and they don't look at any, they don't look at you any differently if you go to maybe a Buddhist temple and you
yeah.
learn, and then you learn what works for you there. And it's like, we are all on this individual path of like, this is who I will be. And then maybe when you feel comfortable, you get a group of people and you hang out and you can share and like, you know, it's like-minded, we're all really into meditation. Let's get together and we'll,
yeah.
you know, have communion together. That's what we do.
Yeah.
But it's so, like, we're locked into these ideas of, and I think a lot of it is, and I'm going all over the place now, but, I mean, there's a lot of money involved
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of power involved
mm-hmm.
and that's the big, you know, a big deterrent to anything like that.
Yeah, I love that idea of, like, yeah, you have, like, certain gyms of, like, certain styles of, like, you know, like just that there's different MMA gyms, right?
Yeah.
Some people teach you kickboxing. Some people teach you like straight up boxing. Some are like, oh, we're what's the one with the knees? Muay Thai.
Muay Thai, yeah.
Which I almost took. Wait, not Muay Thai, Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Muay Thai is a cocktail.
Your Thai is sitting in your closet, but yeah.
But yeah, what if you had like a spiritual like
yeah.
stuff? Like, what, okay, yeah. The
gyms.
Buddhist.
You had gyms of, instead of churches, you had gyms.
Right. And they're like, you know what? Honestly, a lot of great fighters have like combined lots of like elements from all of them.
I was thinking about people that have really helped to kind of define a lot of what I agree with before coming on the podcast. And I guess it's not like improv, so I can do that, right? I can
yeah, yeah.
come up with stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, someone that, I mean, like Bruce Lee, honestly, if you read what his philosophies were
oh, yeah.
on martial arts. And
fucking
his,
brilliant, dude.
Yeah, Jeet Kune Do, the whole idea of Jeet Kune Do is no style. But it's no
yeah.
style through all styles.
Yes.
And
I
was
that.
Thinking if I was to have a religion, that is what I would say, is that I don't believe in any religion, but I believe in all religions. And it's about creating yourself based on what you learn and incorporating what you think is best. You have to be the teacup. I mean, like, you have to be the water in the teacup, you know? It's like, you can take the shape of
yeah.
whatever you need to, but you have to be ready to pound down on rock if you need to, you know?
Dude, that I could not agree more. I feel almost the same way with my own views towards religion. It's that, yeah, nothing and yet all of them and yet nothing. Like,
yeah.
none of them. And, you know, it's interesting. It is one cool thing I have heard. I've had heard some Buddhist people say before, like, yeah, whatever doesn't work, like, forget it. Like,
yeah.
you know, if you compare this to science, then, and science says it's wrong, then they're like, okay, listen to science. Like, it's kind of cool in that regard. But even still, there does feel like there's a certain doctrine or roadmap that you have to follow. It depends on the school. It really
For
depends
sure.
on the school you
because,
go to.
Because, I mean, coming up in the church, and I know that you're the same way, you learn things that you probably still believe in and still hold dear.
Yeah.
And I still, if Jesus was to walk in today, I would be like, you are so right about so much.
You fucking nailed it, dude.
Yeah, and I totally, I mean, like, I there's a lot that I don't know in this world, and, like, I have yet, and I accept that.
Yeah,
you
oh,
know?
Totally. And, I, you know, I hope when one of my, I have this anxiety less than when I, certainly than when I first started this podcast, is, like, I hope when people hear me criticizing aspects of the church, they don't, A, they don't even think of it as specifically the churches I grew up in, because that's not always the case,
no.
or the Presbyterian church at large. I think actually the Presbyterians do, from what I see, they're fairly mission-oriented. They actually do a fair amount of that, the stuff that I was just criticizing churches earlier for doing. Always, sometimes I feel like I need to say that. Like, I don't want, like, people to, like, freak out.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I totally. One thing for me, it was like I went through when I went through my kind of de-religious phase of just slowly unraveling everything.
You went completely opposite, right?
Yeah. Well, I was a totally opposite for a while, and then I started incorporating more and more Zen stuff, which was kind of like talking about popping spiritual bubbles. It sort of made me question all of my beliefs and all of the good, even the good things that the church had gotten me, and so that was. But then, and so that was kind of a negative period for me for a while. But then now it was through seeing that that I totally appreciate a lot of the principles at play more than I ever did when they were just handed to me by default. Maybe I'm less good at just naturally applying them because they're not like ritualistic and like automatic to me. But like I feel like I have a, I don't know, a better sense of like, oh, now I know why we need to like why
I mean out about what you believe in yourself. Yeah. I mean, and that's I think a really strong thing. And I think I know a lot of people that are scared to say that they're atheist, for example, because of how like it's I think that's the best thing, like that fear of like I don't want to go against like people to think that I'm hammering on the church or I'm hammering on the church that I went to. Because you look at atheists, and I know atheists who are, they can't stand the movement of atheism.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, we have to be against everything, and we're going to fight everything, and that's just not what they believe. And that's because this over, it's just like Crusade, even not to hamper on that, but like, if you have a movement that's so big and so general, the Catholic Church, for instance,
right.
Where I know the, for a fact that there's really good Catholic churches, but I think you have to look at a different, like, we have to separate church from religion, from religions, from religious institutions. Like, we need to redefine what we're talking about, not the concept of, like, Catholicism. That's not what we're railing against. We're not against Catholic churches, which have, there are strong communities. There's also Catholic churches that are terrible and that are sucking money from parishioners.
Right.
But that's a, it's, you can't generalize. It's like, you have to be specific.
Yeah, we're not, when we criticize Gold's Gym, we're not talking about the location on Green Avenue or whatever.
And not only that, but if you have a shitty Gold's Gym, they're sucking money out of you.
That's right.
Like all the turkey fans. And then you have all the machinery is shitty, but then you have two or three people that go to that gym that are lapping that pool, that are working on what equipment is there, and they're able to make, you know, and lose 50 pounds and become, you know, strong. And
God bless them. Let them keep using that gym. But maybe you should question, can I find a better gym?
Yes. And it's all about the fact that there were three individuals. Those individuals, like, you have to, it's the people. It's people.
Yeah. And dude, something you mentioned earlier, it's something I wanted to talk to you about before you came on. With the improv being your community, and specifically you are so involved with the Clubhouse. I mean, I don't know. So my own personal, how long have you been at the Clubhouse?
I've been at the Clubhouse. I started tech directing, I think, 2 years, like when they opened the new location.
Gotcha.
She wanted someone to take over for that. And then I've kind of like worked my way to helping more.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't even know if it's a real position, but I do know it's a need that needs to be met. And that's why I'm doing it.
Well, dude, you do much that just like the case. So that theater, I've seen it when I first took an improv class like 4 years ago or something, four years ago at the old location, and it wasn't at the old location, but I would go to some shows at the old Clubhouse location
for sure
on El Centro. And it was still fun. Like I was fully into stand, like I was completely 100% in the stand up world, zero legs in the improv world. So it was kind of cool to see like what a different comedy scene of also dedicated people, but just on a totally slightly different philosophies on a lot of ways, different attitudes and like vibe and stuff
for sure.
And that was the old location was cool. I never really felt like a part of anything there because I'd never like performed there or anything. But then this new location, when I came back to improv, started taking classes again, and now the new location is open, and it's become such a huge hub of the indie community, not only for improv but for stand-up, certainly for improv.
Yeah,
but as more and more stand-up shows are starting to get put on there too.
She's trying to diversify for sure. Beck Drysdale, bless her soul. Yeah,
well, I mean, it must be because that's such the work you do for it as a volunteer is much more than most people who get so much out of that do. So I mean, do you feel, but it feels fulfilling to you? Yeah,
it's completely fulfilling.
Yeah.
I cannot, like, I found a place. And it's just like, and I think it's like a lot of people that have found with the Clubhouse is they found a place where they're accepted for who they are. Mm-hmm. They can do whatever they want without judgment. And it's something that they can craft their art without any sort of oversight being told that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And
that's that's a lot of all we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I recently, you know, I saw a post about, you know, they had the pay hike at UCB. And like people are starting to bugger about it. And they were trying to explain that UCB has done a lot. It's allowed people to go on the stage. And now it's time to start giving back. And I'm like, yeah, it's become a place that's too big.
Yep.
And you have someone that is saying, yes, you're funny. No, you're not funny.
Yep.
Regardless of how you really feel or anyone else.
Yep. Yep.
And like, I've never been asked to go on a house team there and I'm fine. I learned so much at UCB. I hold no grudges.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I can come to the Clubhouse where I can run a show. I can host a show any night.
Yep.
It's so cheap. It's so welcoming. And the work is all on me to get the crowd, which is fine because that's what I wanted to do anyway.
Right.
And I'm not having to like be on a wait list or, you know, waiting for someone to tell me that I'm ready or approved.
Or making assumption, again, making so much wondering about what do they really like me? What do they really think of me?
It takes the politics out of it. And that's the other thing because it is. It's when you have something that's so big. It's like it's impossible to bring everyone on board. And so you have a select. And so, you know, people will go out and start their own communities. And that's what the Clubhouse did.
Yep.
And one of the tenets that Beck Drysdale made was that everyone is accepted. There will be no auditions or school curriculum. You know, it's just a place that people can come try out their new stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only time, you know, you'll be asked not to is if it hurts somebody or damages the theater. You just and that's the other thing. Respect the space. Respect everyone else. And those are the only two rules, I think, you know, the actual rules. The do not, you know, it's not a do not. It's just respect.
Totally. Yeah. And, I part of it, too. And, I took classes at UCB. I hold no ill will against it. I mean, it's part of it is just simply has gotten so big. Like it's just the amount of improvisers, people looking to be on improv teams has exponentially grown even in 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, even though the other schools, I mean, you have the Nerdist, the Pack, IO, they're all like, you know, and the problem is too, is they need, they have certain, you know, they have budgets.
Right.
And that's the thing, you know, Clubhouse, we pay the rent for the space. And Beck is volunteering just as much time as anyone else there.
That's mind blowing. Yeah, yeah.
Running, like, you know, working with the city. And I think it really comes down to it's a lot of the same reasons that people go on mission trips or, like, you know, I was talking about it being close to, like, my church. It's like I've gotten so much outside of doing comedy from just, like, the sense of community, learning about myself from doing this. Yeah. I want to give that to someone else.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing when the gift is a performance space and a gift is – it's not – there's not really strings attached to it. I mean, it's like pay the rent, but that's like just that's just asking a buy-in. It's not saying you better be this funny or else you're not going to be able to be on a thing. And you know, but like you're giving somebody almost literally a blank slate, a blank stage, a black stage, up smaller or larger, and you're saying do with it what you're going to. I mean, respect the fucking space, you animal.
Yeah, please clean up. Don't make Jason Van Glass hunt you down. And right,
but it's like I don't know. To me, that's like, and part of what, you know, I'm repeating myself on this podcast. Maybe you might be one of the only guests who may have heard me repeat a point that I've already made on the podcast before. But like one of my hippie kind of new agey views of like what I don't know our duty as human beings speaking of spiritual bubbles, but we have like I see of humanity sometimes as like we're a big monitor and we're all each individually a pixel, right?
Okay.
And so it's my job, it doesn't, sometimes my job is to be blue, sometimes it's to be yellow or red, or but maybe sometimes it's just to be whatever I naturally am. It's whatever is in, to bring what's inside me out.
Yeah.
And so the picture is going to look different than what I bring out, whatever somebody else does bring out. And so, and to bring it back into ego for a second, it's like the problems start happening when I start thinking like I'm more important than just a pixel.
Yeah.
But then I also get, if I turn myself off and be like, I'm just a fucking pixel, what do I matter, and get dim, that's like that's depression.
Yeah. Sense.
Anyway, the gift of the Clubhouse, the gift of this space is so beautiful because it allows us to be the pixels we really are.
Yeah.
Ryan.
And I, you know, I really want to pitch a book myself, if that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a book.
That's me, sorry.
There's a book called, I think it's called The Art of Give and Take by Adam Grant. Be wrong about the title.
Yeah.
But it's all about, Art of Give and Take. Yeah, it's about people who are givers, takers, and basically how there's some people that expect something in return if they offer something. There's people that will just give out into the world because they know they've reaped the benefits of other givers.
Uh-huh.
And
sounds like a conservative book, Ryan.
I know.
there's the entitlement class, the welfare queens, and then there's the job creators.
Well, the whole thing is it goes into how much more successful. Thanks. I am a staunch Republican. I am against everything that you probably hold dear. No, that is absolutely not true. I just want to preface that for people that do not know me.
You're not going to risk it being a bit on this.
No, because this goes into the ether. And well, actually, unless Trump is listening to this, in which case I am a Republican.
Yeah.
I'm a white, straight Republican. No. You
did call him literally the devil earlier.
Well, he's a fucking... never mind. No, but to get back, I mean, like, it's giving... The big part of the book is just how much more successful givers are in the long run than takers. And that someone who is only thinking of themselves and like not helping others without like expectation. And then like, and then the part of that is you can't be doing it to be a giver because then you're still a take, you know, like
totally.
There's definitely a line there of like, but to realize that if I give something that I have to offer and it's not going to do anything to me, then why not?
100. God, it's so true. And like, I think that's one of the weird, like, and hilarious tricks and hacks of humanity that's made it work so well is that when you do give, I almost always feel better when I'm in a giving mindset.
Yeah.
But I trick myself, or I get tricked, whatever. My brain tricks me into thinking that I'll be happier being lazy and taking more, consuming more. But then that almost always leads into a lethargic, depressed, beating myself up stage versus the giving mindset. It's rejuvenative. It's so energetic. And I think you're right. We don't want to be only giving for selfish reasons in that sense. But like, I also think there's some fake it till you make it maybe there too, where it's like, you know what? If you need to start off for a selfish reason, because you're like, I know this is going to make me feel good. I know I'm going to be like a so much of a better person by like doing this.
If that helps reprogram you.
If that helps just kickstart the momentum, and then maybe it'll transform into like, this is just what I do because it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And it makes other people feel good too.
Well, and after the election, I think I'm hoping that mindset starts kicking in because you have a lot of people that were donating to Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. And you know, this is my fear, is that as the election gets further into our memories, or as the devil himself said, it was so long ago, let's just forget it. That the people will stop giving, and you're going to see, basically the same thing that happens with blood banks after a big disaster is people just forget.
Yeah.
And I think people need to, this may be good to have someone that's so evil in charge of our government. It's going to constantly remind us that we are our country and that we are responsible for doing what happens.
Yep.
We can't rely on politicians or anyone else to continue the good that can happen.
I mean, the pendulum always swings in American politics. It always does. It pisses us off every like 8 years or 4 years.
This is more like the pendulum dropping, though. And I don't think, I'm sorry, I can't, because the pendulum swinging would be Jeb Bush being in office, or Mitt Romney somehow picking up the pieces and coming in. But when you have, never mind. But
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
but hey, if you're as an enemy of Donald Trump, he did wish you to have a good new year.
Oh, I know. He and all the love back at you. I have stuff to give. So yeah.
So we are about the show. We've been going longer than I usually expect. That's fine. It's been a great conversation.
Good. Oh, I'm glad. I was worried.
Do you want to make up your own religion?
I certainly do. Okay. Yeah, I'm totally down.
And you said something earlier. I was like almost the perfect lead-in point, but I wanted to keep talking.
I totally will accept that.
Wait, we wanted the gym like structure, but was there some other aspect of it too?
If I was to do it, it would be solely on, honestly, from what I was thinking is that it would be the gym aspect. And I honestly, like even martial arts in itself, I could totally see some sort of like physical activity.
Yeah.
Whether it's like, there's the concept of Kung Fu, which Kung Fu isn't, necessarily a martial art. If I remember correctly, Kung Fu is actually, in definition, excelling at something. And that's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
From what I understand. And so the idea of excelling at martial arts is just one facet of what Kung Fu can be. You can be a painter and it can be Kung Fu.
Yeah.
You can be, you know, and even if that's not true, for the sake of this, it should be. Anyone is possibly excelling at something and working on something so hard that it takes you out of yourself and it becomes the craft itself, I think, is really important.
I love that.
And so I think to have people of like-minded nature coming together for artistic endeavors.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have people that enjoy those wine and paint places. Why can't that be a church?
Totally. Totally. Maybe Soul Cycle. Do you know Soul Cycle?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a Kung Fu version of Soul, or not Kung Fu, because we already established it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But exactly. It's like you go to your Soul Cycle gym, and then that's your church. It's like, this will be our service today. We're going to do 45 minutes. And then I think it would be followed by like maybe a little small group of like expressing what they've learned this past week. How that sort of fits into their lives.
Is there any sense of God in this, creator?
Only what you bring to the table, because I don't want to restrict it to an overlining definition. I think that it should be something that's self-explored. I think it's that I would hope that people find an energy or something that they can kind of express to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I think the biggest problem is putting I think the only rules is there's no rules.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah. No rules, no regulations.
Yeah. It's like you find out what you believe in and we'll respect that. As long as it doesn't like the clubhouse, you respect each other and you respect the space.
Yeah.
You know?
Where it's like there's I feel like there's certain people, and I'm so appreciative of the people, for instance, who consider themselves psychonauts, and I'm not talking about people who just trip, like take drugs all the time and then just like do it for recreation for funsies. But like there's people out there who are, you know, risking a lot of legal implications and things like that, and their own mental health, because they believe in, say, the power of psychedelics to bring about spiritual transformations, personal mental transformations, and things of that nature. And so I consider them as like, they're sort of like explorers that are, their duty is to just report back honestly what they've discovered, what works for them or what not, what doesn't. And in the same way, it'd be cool to have a community of people who are like, this is what I tried this week or this month. Didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Or this did work for me.
And my dream would be able to be like a shogun or a samurai, you know, a wanderer, someone that's not attached to anything. Go to that community. Like if they were to offer like an opportunity to speak about the subject in a safe space, and people can come and listen. And I mean, like, honestly, everything that I'm describing is probably just life and people having to take the initiative to do it on themselves. But that's what I think. If everyone had that mindset, it would be so much, the world would be a better place. Look at you. I mean, you're exploring different philosophies and you're starting to incorporate them into it. You're getting ideas through this podcast, through like, you know, of what you want to explore or what you think can be. Like, that's so positive to me.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I love one reason I like taking different sources, not just in religion, but just in general, is that I can't remember where this came from, but like somebody was talking about the idea of like idea sex happening when you have two different ideas and then you like bring them together and then you figure out what's like, what weird things do they have in common? And that's how, honestly, I feel like that's how most things are created. That's like, cause there's nothing truly original in the sense that everything is derivative, but what makes things unique is that they're derivative of unique sources of like multiple unique things, a weird new combination of stuff that nobody else has tried. The specific mix of ingredients.
Yeah, it's like what's his name? Who put the Grey album?
Girl
Talk.
Yeah.
It's basically Girl Talk. Yeah.
Yeah, but
why not?
It's
express,
like,
yeah.
So part of that is like, opening yourself up to different ideas and different experiences, and just the hard part is like challenging yourself to question the ones you actually hold. And like, oh, maybe that's not true. Are there any holy texts in this?
The library. It's about going to the library. It's honestly, I would love there to be so many religious texts, and it's about study and, you know, finding it on your own.
Well, you know, and that kind of reminds me of like, I feel like, I've never heard somebody directly say this, but I feel like if you are in any whatever religious context you are, whether you're like, I'm a Christian, every book you read is going to, you're going to read it through a Christian lens.
Yes.
You know, every Buddhist reads everything through a Buddhist lens. Like, you just, you almost, if you are a spiritual seeker or you're like kind of wandering on that path or whoever you are, you can't help but read it through your own lens. And so that sense, designating some books as holy or not holy is sort of like, it's so limiting to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's like talking about having, and I don't want to extend this too long.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Okay,
you're fine.
Cool. But like the idea of like being born into a religion to me is one of my biggest regrets is that you're not allowed to do, and I think we're something like you who was born in a religion and you went through a period where you had to reject everything only to start assimilating it back into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's almost something that's necessary to get a clear understanding of what you really believe in.
Yeah.
Because I know people that are born as, you know, Christian, Muslim, whatever faith. And it's just like, you can't help but have that fear of like, oh, but what if they were right?
Yeah.
What if my... But then it's like, yeah, you have to think of all the people that didn't have that in their lives.
Totally.
Yeah.
At these gyms, with our 45 minutes plus some for talking and sharing.
Yes.
Is there a youth group? Is there like a kids stuff?
Yeah. I think it's... But it's, they're formed on their own. I love the concept of small groups. And I think that is one of the...
Yeah.
My church has started doing that. And I think if they had that when I was there, I would have had such a more satisfying time where you are getting together with a group that you select, very similar to an improv team. I think the best are ones that you select, not forced on you by your church. a little inside humor there.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you get to really be with people that want to explore the same concepts that you do.
Yeah.
And you can take that journey together because, like we were talking about, you know, where there's two and no more than two, maybe seven or eight, and that's it. And then have your spiritual driver.
I love that, man. There's something, because I remember we had smaller groups, I mean, in various situations throughout like youth group and stuff. And then I'm in college when I went to my Presbyterian campus ministry group. But the small group is, because it's different than the big, you know, however many people you have, 50, 60, whatever, where you're just kind of drowned out. You're kind of feeling like, I don't. But so it gives you enough opportunity to have your own little voice, your own little take, but also get enough of different ideas in there too. It's not just like you and one person or.
Well, I look at like my parents were, you know, the worship service is for God. The small groups are for you. Right.
Ooh.
But to me, I look at it as if I was God, which I am not, no idea how he even conceives thought. But if I was God, I would have, it would be easier for me to enjoy the smaller things, the smaller voices, than a bunch of drones spouting the same words. I would be interested in sitting down in those small groups and seeing what they're really picking apart.
Yeah.
If that is the worship.
Far more entertaining.
Far more entertaining and more fulfilling, because it's not, I'm not seeing them just, because would you rather see someone sing a song or would you rather see someone write a song and have it sing to you? Like, you create your own song, and you can't.
That's
create
beautiful.
A song as a huge group. You can sing it, but as a small group, you can come together and do it, you know, yourself.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is there any evangelism for this for these gyms? Any marketing?
I think that the biggest evangelism would be aware that you can seek us on your own. aware that there is something out there. The only thing that needs to really happen is the education that these groups exist. You're not forced to come to us, but know that if you ever need a place to go, like, that would be the message.
Right on. Is there any sense of an afterlife?
Only what these small groups discover.
Yeah.
Or believe. I think that I would. The one thing I would shy away from is the idea that there is a right way to get anywhere.
Yeah,
there's no one way. I think my concept of afterlife would be the simple idea that all rivers lead to the ocean.
Yeah, I love that. I used to think of different religions as being like, or different meditation practices or different whatever spiritual methods as being like different paths up the same mountain.
Mm-hmm.
As being like, oh, okay, so sometimes you went on the path through this point. Well, the left path is the more like. That would be the Protestant path. The right path is the Catholic path.
And
if you go farther down the Catholic path, like, well, it's like here, but there. Sometimes I think it's just there is no, there aren't even, I don't know, maybe there's not always a path, and maybe you have to create your own path. Sometimes you have to forge your own way.
In that concept, I love that idea, because I've always said that I think that life, it's not about the end. It's not about getting to the top of the mountain, which to me would be what would be the afterlife, right? Yeah. It's all about the journey up the mountain. Because when you're hiking,
yeah,
it's like you get up to the top, you breathe for a second, and then you go back down.
Yep. You're like, well, this is nice.
To me, the fun is finding that path. And yeah, getting up that mountain. And I think so, to take away the focus on the top of the mountain and realize that, hey, we're going to have a fun journey. Let's make the best that we can of it now.
Yeah.
Instead of being so concerned about getting to the top, we're all here together. We're enjoying each other's fellowship on this hike.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just like focus on that?
Right on, man.
Yeah.
Do you have a title for this thing?
Name? Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do for life. I don't know. No title. That'll be it. It'll be the title of no title. No title, but all titles.
No title, but all titles.
Yeah.
I love it, man. Where can people find you online and stuff?
Oh,
if you want them to find you online.
Yeah. I don't actually have, I guess I have an Instagram and Twitter under Counts It, which I'll be updating shortly with the new last name that I've received from getting married. but for now, Counts It. And you can always find me at the clubhouse every second and fourth Wednesday at 10 p.m. Coconut Club.
Right on.
Musical improv. It's fun.
I do. And I love, by the way, guys, if you're listening, I do love Ryan's, not only his musical improv, which I did your show one time with our team, and like I had never done any musical improv before.
Yeah,
they're so supportive.
Music brings everyone together. I love it.
It was a beautiful, it was a way more fun than I thought. I was like kind of terrified going in, but it was like so much more fun. Be like, oh, we just get to like make up Broadway shit.
Yeah.
As we go.
And no one's going to judge you.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I have a lot of Broadway tropes in the back of my mind more than I realized.
We all carry them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and I love watching you just with Train Caboose too.
Oh, Gregory Lawrence Smith is more than my friend. He's definitely a brother.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, I think one of I try to practice what I preach, I should say. We just are trying to find our own road, you know, and we're taking whatever works for us as a group.
It's definitely unique. It's stuff people haven't seen before.
Yeah.
So I love watching you guys improvise. So definitely, if you're in LA, check out Ryan.
Aww.
Wherever you can, and go to the fucking clubhouse. It's like the coolest place in. It's one of the coolest places in LA comedy for my money.
Yeah. That. And Revolver, because...
That's right.
<yeah.
laughs> Copper Still every
Copper Still
Tuesday.
Every
Tuesday. Anyway, thanks so much, dude.
Yeah,
this
of
was
course.
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's the show. Once again, thank you to Ryan Counts. If you like this show, ChooseYourOwnReligion.com, Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher. Love you. Jamaste.
What's a Creative Podcast Network? Yeah.